Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, for the 450th time, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rap Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires, and he couldn't be further away if I tried, Joe Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Right, you know, I was talking about, I just had a really hard time. But, you know, other than that,
Are you calling from the bottom of a well?
Well, that's just kind of my supervisor, Tom Mask. You heard about the N95 mask? This is the N2095 mask. I can't even get a...
I can't even get any oxygen from it. But I figure better safe than sorry. I just go right and say, it's a podcast, you know?
Don't have to worry about it. I have virus protection.
Oh, I let mine expire. Boy, was I an idiot. Contrary to popular belief.
150 of these damn things.
Viruses?
No. Podcasts.
Oh. Yeah, I think we're addicted.
Well, yeah, we've got listeners.
We do. Thank you.
Around 2,500 as
and now you have something to do when you're self-quarantined at home.
Well, we said last week that that this was a big deal. They canceled the Emerald City Comic Con.
Yeah. And they're
South locked, by Southwest.
They locked down Italy. About the only good news I've heard about all this is that in China, not that they're a bastion of free information, have been releasing people who had been previously quarantined, and they're recovering. So the recovery rate is like 80% so far. I mean, if you're like me with diabetes and rheumatoid arthritis, yeah, I'm a little bit concerned. But as long as you got yourself, a pile of comic books. I think Corey's safe behind his wall of omnibuses. And you got something.
Yeah, if I get upset, man.
You got good on streaming services. Or, you know, you got 450 of this here podcast you could sit and listen to. So you're set.
And let's say each episode about an hour and a half. That would last you carry the four.
Yeah.
A long time.
Long time. Very long. Hopefully you were smart enough to get enough Costco toilet paper. Just any toilet paper. But just remember, even Mr. Rogers loved farting in public.
They are now looking at if WonderCon, which is the kind of the sequel to the San Diego Comic-Con. That one is in Anaheim, April 10 through 12, and it's much more comic-focused, which is weird because Anaheim's far closer to L.A. But they're starting to wonder if that one is going to be canceled. And again, there are the people at San Diego Comic-Con, Comic-Con International, are looking into what they may have to do. But I was shocked that South by Southwest is canceled because that's a multi-million dollar festival for music and movies and comics. And every year Marvel goes down there and they set up at the pretty much what it is every every year, they have some sort of special deal on Marvel Unlimited. And this year, I don't know what they were planning, but it's all been called off. So the city of Austin, counting on a lot of money, not coming in.
You know, it's kind of funny, too, because there are actually still a bunch of smaller shows going on. Over the weekend, there were two comic shows in different parts of the city. Just quick one days that are popping up. Kind of like with toy shows, I think you get the big fun shows. Like for us, we got the GalaxyCon coming up this November where they have name guests. And of course, our beloved MCBF's MSP SpringCon 2020 still look like it's a go, May 16th and 17th, 2020. We'll let you know here otherwise, but they're hoping, you know, things start subsiding as the flu is wont to do when, you know, warmer weather comes and we're not all stuffed inside. We actually had a decent day yesterday. It was like 60 degrees. I hope you got a chance to air out your house a little bit.
I was at the group home, took a couple clients on a nice long walk, and then when I got home, I was too exhausted to sit out on the deck and read comics. So when I got home, I actually went to sleep because I actually got called into work 2 hours early on Daylight Savings Day.
Which was 3 hours.
So I was supposed to be in at 8, and then around midnight I get a phone call waking me up. Is there any way you could come in at 6 a.m.? Oh, I'd rather not. No, we'll give you a bonus. I really don't. Corey, we don't have anybody who can pass meds in blah, blah, blah cottage. All right. Fine. So Sunday, I was supposed to be in at work at 8 o'clock, and instead I had to be there at 6, which means I had to wake up at 4:30 in the morning to be to work. Oh, not pretty. Not pretty at all. But I made it.
Kind of, sort of.
Now, we haven't done this in a while, Joe. Do you know we're only 6 episodes behind Law and Order's episode count now?
Oh, wait, is that what they do? They pause, a dramatic pause, and then, yes.
Boom, boom. Episode 450, which means we just passed X Factor in the UK. We passed Law and Order Special Victims Unit, which has 446 episodes. Let's see here. The Magic Roundabout, which is a children's television show in France, 441 episodes. The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, we passed that a while ago. They had 435 episodes. We've passed the Teletubbies, Joe. We have more episodes than the Teletubbies.
No.
Let's see. Law and Order has 456 episodes, as does Alfred Hitchcock Presents. So we're moving right on up. By the time we pass episode 50, I mean 500, we will have passed the WWE Experience, which is their current syndicated show.
Because we're moving on up.
Real Time with Bill Maher, which has 484 episodes. Let's see. A couple of soap operas, Generations and Sous le Soleil. So we are unstoppable.
Maybe.
No. Nothing's going to stop us. Thomas
Nothing's going to stop us now.
Has 537 episodes. We need to at least beat that. We must be.
I want to go for Mr. Rogers' record.
Oh, what was that?
Well, 50 plus years.
Let's see. Yeah, but he didn't have new episodes every day, and they were in reruns for a long time. So let's see. Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Fire up the Strotron 2000. I haven't upgraded like you have.
I usually, because my old ones just die on me.
Because you're so mean to them. You are mean. There were 912 episodes, including specials, and it did not last for 50 years. It was 31 years.
They were on for 50 years.
Oh, it's still on, but they quit making new episodes in 2001.
Yeah. Death will do that to you.
Did he die in 2001?
To the death!
Let me take a look.
Figure as long as yours is fired up, I can just sit here and sleep.
Well, that's because you're not feeling well.
I'm not. See, feel me right here. See?
No. Ooh, right there. Right there. There's a reason I do this from my from far away. He died in 2003, so he canceled the show before he passed
away. So keep working or it'll kill you.
Damn right. Stan Lee would show up at the office 3 times a week his whole life. I think the last few months he only went to the office once a week. But that's not why we're here.
No. No, it's not Taco Tuesday yet. The weekend's over with. It's Monday, and the way I'm going to be hacking my lungs off, Corey's going to need extra time to polish this turd into the exact and loving podcast you all have enjoyed and cherished these past 449 episodes.
And that you have gotten to know over these 450 episodes. You've gotten to know us. You've gotten to know who we are. We know that Joe loves his dad jokes.
I love my dad jokes. Corey doesn't like his dad jokes. Yeah, I know.
And me, you've learned that I'm pretty much a, I don't know, dweeb, dork, loser, nerd.
Rat bastard.
Poindexter.
Giant size man thing with a glob.
Goody two shoes. Some people call me a goody two shoes.
Goody two shoes. What? Return them shoes.
Yes.
But don't return us. We love you, Corey.
But no, if you're going to be stuck at home, quarantined, I don't know, will there be armed guards for this quarantine? Will it be like the Purge?
I don't think so, because I don't think that's their, a lot of the guards have that type of weaponry on them. The citizens do, but not the guards. Plus, I've got on my little badge that I am an emergency responder, so if they do declare an emergency, I get to go. And believe me, you're the first person I'm locking up, Strode.
Good, lock me in the house with my video games and my DVDs and my Blu-rays and my streaming and my comics.
Well, see, and the plus thing is, if I do have to storm the compound, I don't want to damage the omnibuses, so it'll have to do. We have to do these things delicately.
But you could be stuck at home, and all you would have to keep you sane would be reading comic books.
You know, the two things that would cause us to riot: take away our Twinkies, take away our internet, take away our comics.
That's three things.
I thought there wasn't going to be math. I think you blew me with all the show math talk. It wasn't supposed to be math.
You're just freaking out that we're about to beat Law and Order.
I don't recall actually watching Law and Order.
You know why I never watched Law and Order?
Because you don't believe in either.
No, because I'm one of those stupid completists. And if I watch a show, I want to watch every episode. And that's 457 episodes I'd have to watch.
So my planned Gunsmoke revival is way out.
Well, I think early episodes of Gunsmoke you actually cannot find anywhere.
Oh, yeah, but we can't find some Doctor Who either. I still want it.
And
I think the only difference is with that, they actually know either they have the scripts or they have some audio.
Yeah.
Because there was one animated, or they animated it when
they've done a few that they've animated.
Yeah, which is as good as anything.
And then isn't there the one that was written by Douglas Adams that was mostly filmed and not completed that they finally, they were able to kind of cobble that together a couple of years ago?
Yeah, it's also in a book, and you could see bits of it on both versions of The Five Doctors. The original one they aired, and then when they redid it, and I don't know why they redid it, but they put different pieces of it in the redone one. So I have it on VHS where the original one, the way they aired it, and then when they, for some reason, redid it, they didn't like what they had used, and they just put in something different.
No, okay.
Which is kind of weird, because I didn't realize that, because when I saw the redone one, they changed the time scoop that scooped the doctors out of the reality. But when they got to the Tom Baker stuff, it was kind of like, this is not what I remember. And then I went back and, they did change it. I don't know if I agree with the redone one. I kind of like the way it was the first way, but whatever. I don't own the property. I just...
And, you know, let's remember that if they can find old stuff and repurpose it, they're going to.
Very true.
Because lost episodes always make a ton of money.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I still remember in the 80s when they had that whole The Honeymooners, the lost episodes, because there was only one season of The Honeymooners. But there were all of the skits that were on the Jackie Gleason show.
If you don't count the Flintstones, yeah.
Yeah. I actually, at the group home, the clients were, they didn't handle the daylight savings time very well. They slept pretty late. So they, on MeTV, they were running the Flintstones, and they ran one of the Great Gazoo episodes.
Ah.
Now, as a kid, I liked them, but oh, that was bad.
Yeah.
Oh, that was bad. It's one of those where you're watching it and you're going, this is just stupid. This doesn't make any sense at all. Wow, they must have really been out of ideas. So, but that's not why we're here. We're here to talk about the comics that you should be reading or avoiding.
Yes.
So, Joe, what's the first comic you have on your review list?
I am going to start out with some of those that I was talking about when I was back at Tommy-Con and picked up some things. The first one was the book from, I don't know if he's friends of the show or not. I know I'm friends with him, Lance Ward, who, if you excuse me a moment, I'm going to look for some of his information. Because again, I don't know where he'll be next, but he is on the Facebook, and he, you know, as an artist, he keeps himself public figured, so you can check there. Does not look like he has a website for himself, but inside, if you go to birdcagebottombooks.com, you can go check out his books called Blood and Drugs. I have not gotten a chance to talk to him about this. I know Lance has gone through some shit in his life, so I have no idea how much of this, if any, is as autobiographical or just things from people he knows. But it's basically the story of people on the fringes of society and how a single poor decision changed one man's life forever. The back says he tried heroin just once and was hooked. Lance has a raw, gritty style that pretty much works the story and really cuts with the emotion, too. It's all black and white, a little bit of color on the cover. And I know, Corey, you and I talked about it a couple podcasts back. You and I, Corey, talked about it on a couple podcasts back about, you know, are we supposed to say, hey, oh, I enjoyed this book, because this is tough stuff to read. But I did find it enlightening, a very, very interesting read, and I consequently highly recommend it to everybody. Not terribly expensive book. And of course, if you do run into Lance and do it, he'll probably put a little autograph on it, which he did for me, which was kind of cool. I thought in this case I would, you know, sometimes you look at a book and the art is very stylish and you're kind of like, I don't know if I can get through it. But when I started reading the story, very compelling, and I just read it in one run through, which surprised me. I didn't think I would be able to get through it that quickly. Again, Blood and Drugs by Lance Ward. Head over to the website for the company here. Just trying to take a look here. Yeah, it's Birdcage Bottom Books is out of New York. So birdcagebottombooks.com. Just remember, addiction's no joke. If you or someone you know suffers from addiction, you can call the National Drug Helpline, 1-888-633-3239. Again, 1-888-633-3239. I'm just my brain's not functioning at 100%. Well, I should say it's functioning less than the 100% y'all are used to. I did buy this. Again, I bought it because I know Lance. I like to support my local artists, but on my, on our how do we say it?
Buy, borrow, ignore.
I would say buy it, definitely.
The first book I have is one that we've actually been talking about for a while, The Cimmerian, by, written by Jean-David Morvan and drawn by Pierre Allary. This is a straightforward adaptation of Queen of the Black Coast, which is a Robert E. Howard Conan story. In Europe, it is public domain, so they have adapted pretty much all of the Robert E. Howard Conan stories over in Europe for European comics, but here in the U.S., it's murkier. The stories are still under copyright. Conan is trademarked. There is a company, Conan Properties. It's a lot like Tarzan in a way, where the early novels are, the early Tarzan novels are public domain. But if you use if you use Tarzan, they're going to come down on you. So they announced this adaptation quite a few months ago. Then they pulled it. Now they have reached an agreement with Conan Properties. So you'll actually, when you read it, you'll see the Conan trademark is in place. First off, this is a really nice package. The first part is the adaptation. It's a multi-part story. The second part is actually the Queen of the Black Coast story by Robert E. Howard, the portion that was adapted for this part of the comic. And then there is a three-page preview in the back for another comic by the same publisher. This is a story that when Marvel did it, Roy Thomas was doing all of the Robert E. Howard stuff chronologically in the 70s. And the Queen of the Black Coast, the entire story with Conan and Belit, the pirate queen, lasted over 40 issues. So Roy put in a lot of other stuff. Much like Roy's Conan work, he would adapt the Robert E. Howard stuff, but then he would make sure to change stuff so that it fit in the larger narrative of Conan's life that L. Sprang DeCamp and Lynn Carter had put together. So, Joe, you probably remember the 12 Conan books of the 70s. They were kind of almost required reading if you were a fantasy comic book fan back then. The actual stories themselves don't blend as well because Robert E. Howard wasn't caring about creating a long sustained narrative. It's, I just want to use this character. And in this, it is an adaptation of the story itself. There were a few weird little quirks with it. The first was it was all written in first person from Conan's perspective. It was not something I was used to, and I understand why they did it from a narrative standpoint, but it was a questionable choice because it kind of there were things that the narration knew that the character didn't know. And that always kind of bugs me and throws me out of a story. The second thing is, because this is a European book, it is drawn in a European style that a lot of Americans aren't that used to. When we think Conan, we think the Barry Windsor Smith, Neil Adams, John Buscema, I like to call the Brune Hogarth school of comic art, which is all about making sure the anatomy is perfect, making sure that, you know, it's drawn as illustratively as possible. Whereas Europe, they don't use a lot of that Brune Hogarth style. So this, the art by Pierre Allary is more cartoony, and the character faces are almost caricatures. Conan does not look like the Conan we expect him to look like. So it's not the image that has been used in not just American comics, but in the books and the movies and all the other outside stuff for a long time. So it's a different interpretation. Did I like it? It was okay. I'm not going to say it was great. It was a different interpretation of Conan. They have more of the sex scenes because they say this is uncensored, which in American stuff means, oh, yeah, there's boobs. This is a multi-part story that will adapt the whole Queen of the Black Coast. But until we get the trade paperback saying that they will have that Queen of the Black Coast prose in it, I actually would prefer buying this as a comic. One of the things that indie comics are doing that I like, Ahoy does this, this company seems to do this, is the Image stuff that's done like Criminal, they put back matter in that won't be in the collected version. So if you want all that back matter, you have to buy the comics. I call this a borrow unless you are a huge Conan fan. And also, again, unless you're a huge Conan fan, I would just wait for the trade so that it's all collected. Because if you can find Queen of the Black Coast in a number of Conan book collections. So this one is a borrow. I am glad that they put it out. And it was a different interpretation of the character. Joe?
All right. I direct your attention to katebaumanart.com. It's katebaumanart.com. Just Google her name, too. You can find it. She's part of a husband-wife or wife-husband, since I'm doing her first team. And the first book of several that she has, what I didn't realize when I read it was a Kickstarter originally. So finding a copy of it will be tough. Your best bet is to get a hold of her through the website I mentioned. And you can also check out some of the art from her other two books that she sells. But the one that I really liked here was called 20 Fists. It's a queer Romeo and Juliet breakup meets the Warriors. I didn't really know what it was. I just went in with my eyes wide shut. And it was kind of fun because as I first read it, I didn't quite understand what was going on. It was basically two groups in a bar fighting. And then when you get into the second chapter, you understand why they're doing what they're doing. This is kind of, I don't know what you'd say. This is the way they fight and survive. And once I read the second part, I go back and read the first part, and then it made sense. Issue one has two chapters on it. Round one is a fight between the two gangs, the No Names and the Big Jackets. And then there's a flashback tale that sets up the friction between, it's Shell, Billy, remember, queer Romeo and Juliet, and their crews. And I guess the first part's going to be tough to find. Unless you can get it directly from one of the creators involved. It was done by written by Frankie White. That's Frank K.E.E. White, lettered by D.C. Hopkins, and then art by, of course, Kate Bowman, the artist that I met. And the second one she thinks was going to be available, hopefully, by SpringCon. But judging by the first issue, it's very interesting. I liked it. I thought it was a lot of fun to read, and you know, I kind of like going in, not quite knowing what's going on. More importantly, it got me so that I wanted to reread it. How many times have we read something and we recommend a lot of things on the show only to like, well, yeah, it just goes in the collection, never to be read again. This one definitely, I felt good rereading it. And when or if I see issue two, and it's three issues, so I don't know if they're planning kickstarting it. Matter of fact, as long as I got the old 2000, or I should say Kickstarter going. Let me take a look here. Yeah, I don't see anything else coming up. So your chance to get number two is as good as mine. Getting number one will be tougher. I definitely recommend this on a buy. I believe Kate is going to be at SpringCon, so if you get a chance to go and look her up. Otherwise, head on over to her website, Kate Bowman. I found it just by going katebowman.com. I looked for her on the Facebooks. I think I found her, but it looks more like a personal page, not a professional page. So that would be your best place to check it. When I get back, I'll review a little bit more of what her husband was doing when I met up with him, Corey.
The next book that I am reviewing is the new series from Ahoy Comics, Billionaire Island, written by Mark Russell, drawn by Steve Pugh, who have worked together a number of times, including on the Flintstones, which was much, much better than it had any right to be.
Yes.
This is a satirical story about an island that was created in the ocean that you must be a billionaire or working for a billionaire to access. The main gist of the story is that a reporter is asking one of the billionaires who created the island about it, and she is then captured. And satiric hijinks ensue. This is not a subtle satire by any means. This is very much reminds me a lot of Steve Gerber's Howard the Duck stuff, in that the satire is going to be right in your face. You can't miss it. There are tons of just brutally funny sequences. The characters, for the most part, are over-the-top caricatures because they have to be. That's how this sort of story works. Russell is fast becoming one of my favorite writers. He does good humor, good social satire, but in other books, he has shown that he can also do just good comic books, good action stories, good adventure stories, but he's got this wonderful knack of taking a look at what's going on in the world and extrapolating it to the most absurd extremes. Steve Pugh's art, if you've seen him in other books, you know that he has a kind of a cartoony style when need be. But the thing I like best about this is he is being asked to draw outrageous situations, just crazy stuff. And he does it very well, so that even though it's Looney Tune off the wall stuff, you can still look at it and go, oh, okay, that fits. Which is not easy to pull off. That's why you've seen the Howard the Duck stuff that was done for the magazine in the 80s, right, Joe? That was written by Bill Mantlo. It did not work very well, and yet Gene Colan was able to do it well. Frank Brunner was able to do it well. Some people can do that sort of thing. Some people can't. Steve Pugh is able to do it. This is a fantastic, fantastic book. Like all the other Ahoy stuff, it has some back matter. It has a poem. It has a short story, and it has a preview for another comic in it. So once again, Ahoy's putting out a comic that I absolutely love. And here's the thing. A lot of the stuff Ahoy does, you could say, oh, that would have been at Vertigo 10 years ago. They've seemed to have grown out of that, because I can't think of any other comic company that would have published a book this wonderfully strange. Billionaire Island gets a buy from me, Joe. By the way, the name of the island is Freedom Unlimited, or FU Island.
Brilliant. All right. The husband in question of the husband-wife team, and he goes first now because I'm interviewing his book. His name is James Hohenstein. And if you go to J. Hohenstein, that's JHOHENSTEIN.com. You'll see his webpage. You get an idea what his art is like. He actually shows some of his sequential art. and you get an idea of how it looks. I guess the two books in question that I got from him are tied together, Empress of the Thieves and Parsley Figgis. I read Empress of Thieves because they're first two issues. And I absolutely loved it. I love the setup we got going. The lot of backstory we don't know about the Empress of Thieves. Gets in trouble constantly, gets out of trouble constantly. The second issue was a lot of fun because for some reason she wants to ruin the party that one of the rulers are having. And whatever she does just doesn't work. She's on the ship, of course. Nobody knows how, they don't know that she's there. But everything she tries to do tends to just kind of backfire. Like she has a banner that shows off and people love it because she's they're saying the ruler has a sense of humor when she runs through and throws food on the rich. They all, oh, such texture, such color, red's in season. She throws an alligator on the deck. Somebody grabs it and puts it on a leash. And oh, that's truly exotic. The ruler knows something bad's going on, but everybody else doesn't seem to get it. So there's a lot in the background we don't know. The action goes on pretty well. Again, I don't know if James does this full time or part time, or how is he doing it for fun, or if this is how he makes his living. But I don't know. He does not have a cell on his website. But if you go there, you could probably contact him and maybe see about picking him up. He's not on the Facebooks as far as I can tell, but he is on Twitter and where the other ones, Instagram. I don't know. As far as his other works go, this I found Empress of Thieves really engaging. And it's one of those independents that I hope to see another issue down the road. The story was fun. Again, something I just went into not knowing what it was about, but it just kept me going. A little disappointed only two issues are going, but I'm kind of glad that I did take a chance to pick it up. Again, for me, a buy. If you're never quite sure if this is the type of stuff you want to invest your money in, go over to his website and, jhornstein.com, and you get a good example of not only his art, but also he puts up some of his sequential art too. So you can give yourself a little taste before you jump in with your cash there. Mr. Strode.
Joe, you've talked about how the new Marvel series, not Marvel Comics, just Marvel.
Oh, the Marvel thing, yeah.
How there are now three of them, and it's hard to keep track of what's what. There's Marvels, which is the prequel to Marvels. I'm sorry. There's Marvels, which is the prequel to the Earth X trilogy. There's The Marvels, which is the new Kurt Busiek series. And there is also Marvel, which is a miniseries that I will be doing a review of here. I picked up the first issue. There is a framing sequence that Nightmare has broken into the Marvel Universe, and everyone is asleep, and he is kind of running things. This is a framing device for two short stories. The first is a Spider-Man story by Frank Espinoza, whose work I have not seen before, which is a rather standard Spider-Man story of him going out to fight crime, Mary Jane being upset about it, but because of circumstances, by the end of it, Mary Jane is back to, you have to do this because, Joe, what's the Spider-Man catchphrase?
You want me to think?
Yes.
He always thinks in word balloons.
Wrong Spider-Man.
Oh, I'm sorry. And I don't do Japanese, so I don't know how the Japanese Spider-Man does it.
Amazing Fantasy 15. You should be able to see this in your sleep. With
you
great
think
power
I could,
comes,
but I'm not sleeping right now.
With great power comes great responsibility. I was really disappointed by this story. I could not tell if it was part of the dream sequence that was being talked about in the framing story. The art came off as kind of dreamlike and odd, but the story itself was so riddled with cliches and so generic in a lot of ways. It almost felt like they put in, you know, how we fed a computer 500 Batman comics and this is the Batman story it told through its AI. This really felt like they'd given a computer a bunch of 60 Spider-Man stories and had it come up with a Spider-Man story through AI. Not a good story at all. If this was the only story in the book, it would be a definite ignore. However, the second story, Kurt Busiek, drawn by Steve Rude, set in the very early issues of the Avengers when they were trying to, when Rick Jones had been abandoned by Hulk and was helping out the Avengers, and the Avengers are deciding whether they hunt down Hulk or not. It's still where the Hulk is not the childlike brute, but more where he's the kind of intelligent Frankenstein monster Hulk, and it's drawn by Steve Rude. We get so little Steve Rude art that anytime I see Steve Rude art, it's a joy. His art is some of the best in comics. If you've not read his Nexus, if you've not read his Space Ghost, or so many good books he's done. Everything he's done, the Superman Batman story he did, probably one of the greatest crossovers ever done. This really evokes that early era of Marvel without feeling like it's drawn in that really crude style that Marvel had its first couple of years. Rude has the Kirby-esque power in his drawings, but he also has the Alex Toth. Every line that's there needs to be there. There's no extra lines. There's no extra stuff. Kurt Busiek knows the Marvel early characters inside out, upside down. This is really a story of why Rick Jones and the quit being the Hulk's partner in the very early years of Marvel. This was off the charts good, even if you are not a Marvel history fan. Just, it's so, so good. The framing sequence was well done as well, and the framing sequence leads to a cliffhanger ending. This is the first of a mini-series that will be a number of short stories by different creators. I think they were smart to have kind of an indie creator with a kind of a powerhouse creator, so that even if you... Let's say if the Frank Espinosa story would have been really good in an indie style, it would have really helped his career. I think he struck out on his story, but the Kurt Busiek, Steve Rude story made up for it. This is a buy for the framing sequence and the Busiek Rude. Frank Espinosa, I really wish he would have had a better story to go with his more kind of indie art, because if his story would have been better, I would have been seeking out his stuff, because there's a style to his stuff that can work in some things. But I hate to say it, but you blew it, buddy. You blew it. So gets a thumbs up and a buy recommendation from me, Joe.
All right. The last one I've got, and I haven't been counting how many we got. This is going to be a dangerous one for me because it just opened an entire new realm of fiction. It's called The Kronos Trials Time Trial. And it's at first I was kind of like, oh, it's kind of, you know, anytime you put time in the storyline, I kind of dig it. I dig the time travel stuff. But The Kronos Files is a huge series of books. by Risa Walker. And there are three main books, a number of sub-books, you know, like book two, then book 2.5, and then a number of other books that don't tie into the main story but deal with the whole time travel thing. And in this particular one, it's they kind of sub time it. I get it by saying time is not on her side. 19-year-old Cleo Dunn has lived a life of secrecy. Her world-saving, time-traveling parents have kept a low profile in a boring small town, but Cleo yearns for her own adventure. In the fall of 1931, she packs her bags, heads to the big modern city of Chicago. While following her dreams, she becomes a famous illustrator. Her own skills as a time traveler get put to the test. A nasty acquaintance from her parents' past stumbles onto her at the trial of Al Capone, and now Cleo must jump through time to keep the past, present, and future safe. This is kind of a done-in-one compilation of four-issue comic done by Jet City Comics, and I enjoyed the living heck out of this one so much so that I now have a whole list of books and things to pick up. And there have been other – this is the first one. And as far as I can tell, there's four other books from Jet City Comics that have the whole comic series going. So not only do I have four books, but let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 regular books to pick up. So, if you're going to follow me down this rabbit hole, I highly recommend this. As this is not part of the main series, it is still kind of fun. The art is really good. You're able to follow along what's going on. And since I had no idea, again, what I was getting into other than it was a time travel story, I had no idea such a rich lineage behind it. It's like if you were to pick up an IDW book on Star Trek and not realize, oh my gosh, there's so much more to this Star Trek that I wasn't aware of. So kind of fun. I look forward to seeing more about it. As far as big borrow, buy, steal, whatever. Definitely. Well, you got one advantage you have is if your local comic shop has a copy, you can at least peek at it. This was published first edition back in 2014 with the, is the last book been published yet? I can't really tell from this. I think what it is, the other alleged books are, or at least graphic novels, are just the actual comics, not the collected. So, yeah, you just pick up the collected and take a look at it. Or, go borrow yourself Library Bound. Her first book is called Time Bound. And give it a read, see if it's your cup of tea. For me, I absolutely love it. I'm really big on time travel stories. And this is kind of neat to be introduced to this, which apparently is the only time they've done a graphic novel. So check it out. The graphic novel Time Trial, the whole series is the Kronos File. So come get it.
The last comic that I have is a new number one from Marvel that I've been looking forward to for quite a few months. And that is Strange Academy, written by Scotty Young and drawn by Umberto Ramos. Umberto Ramos is a guy who does very wonderful cartoony style art in superheroes. He's been doing this stuff for a while. He had a great run on Spider-Man. He's bounced around, done a lot of books. Strange Academy, the first issue. Let me get some stuff out of the way. This is a very standard first issue. As a matter of fact, if you read this, it reads like almost every X-Men book where it's a bunch of young mutants. Except these are magicians, because in the Doctor Strange book, magic is back in the Marvel Universe after being gone. So there are all these new people who have magic powers. not much different from the X-Men books. But so we start with a young teenage girl who all of a sudden is starting to develop magic powers. It's scaring everybody in the neighborhood. And somebody comes to tell the parents, we'll teach her how to use these powers. Takes her away to New Orleans, where they have set up an academy for these young students. Sounds very, very familiar. Because it sounds so familiar, it's going to take two things to make this work. First is, are the characters interesting enough? And two, is the art fitting the story well? When we get to the academy, of course, you know, we get a small tour of New Orleans. We find out that this is it looks like a normal house from the outside, but when you step onto the grounds, it's very different. We're introduced to all of the characters, including, I think it's Dormammu's kid. A pair of magic twins. The teachers are magic users from the Marvel Universe who've been in minor roles, including the resurrected Brother Voodoo. Doctor Strange does make an appearance, but they kind of make it very clear that while he owns the Academy and he's overseeing it, he's not going to be a main player in this book. They set up inter-character conflicts. They give us scenes to give all of the characters so that we know their personality and what their conflicts are and what their stories are going to be. And we get a good idea of what kind of stories we're going to get, as well as a magic / superhero fight. That being said, that this was very right by the numbers. Scotty Young, whose stuff I love, can go way over the top with his humor at times. He holds it in check here and tells an actual... Scotty Young tells a kind of a restrained coming-of-age story with humor in it, rather than a humor story that happens to have some Marvel Universe characters in it. Umberto Ramos's art has always been... something that I like. He draws in what a lot of people call a Bigfoot style. It's cartoony. The characteristics of each person are exaggerated, not to the point of humor, but to the point to kind of show personality through the art. All in all, this was a book where I read it. It was double-sized, but it didn't feel like it. It's very quickly paced, very professionally done. I picked up the digital version because if you pick up the digital version, you get what Marvel calls a director's cut, which is over 120 pages, which has character design stuff and the pitch and the script and a couple of interviews and all of that to kind of make this seem like it's a big deal. Because a lot of times when a first issue comes out, we tend to dismiss it as, oh, yeah, it's a first issue. You know, they're just throwing it against the wall to see if it will stick. One of the things I like about these digital director's cuts that Marvel does, for the same price as a regular comic, by the way, is that they show all of the work that has gone into making this. All of the stuff that the creators did, all the stuff that was involved in designing the new characters and giving the series a look and setting up, okay, here's the world we're going to play in. Even if you're not a comic creator type person, you know, you're not wanting to be an artist, you're not wanting to be a writer. I love this back matter stuff, and I wish that more digital comics would do it, especially since, hey, it doesn't cost them any more to add the script to the digital version. It doesn't cost them any more to add the prelim drawings to the digital version, and it makes the digital version more interesting. You know, like they say, more bang for your buck. Because remember, with the digital version, you're not paying for a physical copy. So it's why I really like these. This gets a huge buy from me. I really like this series. I hope it lasts longer than most of these do, because most of them tend to have a big launch, and then by the 12th issue, no one cares anymore. And it just sort of drifts along until cancellation. This could be a lot of fun. It's very well done. Scotty Young does great comics that don't last. But I think one of the things about him moving toward being a writer more, he's learned a lot of good storytelling tricks and styles. So I really can't recommend this enough. It's one of the Marvel number ones that I've really, really enjoyed. And you know what else I enjoy, Joe, other than the fact that you're on mute and haven't been interrupting me through the whole episode? I enjoy these guys, our sponsors. Believe it or not, kids, this here podcast has sponsors. And that sponsor, since day one, is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host in the whole known universe. And if you need a website, head on over to DreamHost.com, put in code CRAZY, that's K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year. Now, if you would like to advertise here on any of the Solitaire Rose Network podcasts, you can. Just email me at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Also, head on over to eBay and look for user Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z, that's Joe Crazy Writer, who's always telling us about the eBay in every episode of Crazy Comics and Stories. If you would like to contact us, you can do so. You can give us a call at 952-856-0519. Leave a message and we'll play it on the show. Or you can send us an email at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. And after the sponsors, there are tons of episodes where Joe doesn't interrupt me. Tons of podcasts where Joe doesn't interrupt me. Like these. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network has all sorts of podcasts for you. There's, of course, Crazy Comics and Stories, where myself and Crazy Joe Ryder get together once a week to talk comics. We review comics, we talk about upcoming comics, we talk about comics history. Anything that has to do with comics, we're going to talk about. We also have Series in Review, where we review series and kind of give a DVD commentary of past comics that we've enjoyed. There is also Solitaire Rose Radio. Solitaire Rose Radio is my solo show where I discuss upcoming comics, past comics, comics history, and interview comics creators. These are all at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. There's also the podcast I'm proudest of. That's Novelcast, where I take the novels that I have written and turn them into audiobooks. That's at novels.solitairerose.com. Over at Bad Advice, myself, Dan Moore, and Wolfie B. Bad take your questions and give you bad advice. It's at badadvice.solitairerose.com. Now, don't think that I'm doing all the podcasts, because there's also Scrabbling Across the West by Dave Coffell and Stephanie Coffell. Dave is a musician and Stephanie is his wife. They travel the country performing music and playing Scrabble over at scrabbling.solitairerose.com. And finally, the newest member of the Solitaire Rose Radio group, that's Fantastic Forecast, where myself and host of For the Love of Comics, Adam Vermillion, go over the series The Fantastic Four, four issues at a time. That's available at fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com. If you would like to advertise on any of these podcasts, you can. Just email me at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. And now we get to Joe's favorite part of the show. No, 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 not where he decides to drink a half a bottle of brandy thinking it's medicinal. No, it's what's going on the eBays, Joe.
Fireball. It's Fireball. I like to drink Fireball.
Yeah, but the brandy's more medicinal.
Yeah, but Fireball tastes better. I sell on eBays, K-R-A-Y-Z. Sick or not, it's always on. Matter of fact, I added a bunch of stuff, sold a bunch of stuff. Where is it? It's on the eBays, K-R-A-Y-Z. Come get some.
Now, when you're packing your stuff, will you also give some special coronavirus to it?
I wear gloves.
Oh, good. Wait.
Mainly because I don't want
gloves.
I don't want to get paper cuts from the cardboard. Actually, maybe I'll talk about that in the next episode when I'm actually functional and not losing my voice slowly. How to pack your stuff once you've sold it. Or you could just put get your mint copy of Batman 89, just put a stamp on it, glue a address label on the back, send that sucker in the mail. It'll be fine. I'm sure your friend won't mind. You paid $60 for a mint copy, he won't mind it showing up that way.
You know what you could do? Do what they what Marvel used to do with their subscriptions. Just wrap a piece of brown paper around it, fold yep. it, and put it in the mail.
Could work. Hey,
that's how mine used to show up.
Good ways of doing it, you know, time-tested ways. But who am I to reinvent the wheel? Maybe we'll find out next week.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, 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 not where I drink all the brandy that Joe refuses to. No, it's freaking and geeking. Joe, what you freaking on?
Oh, being sick. This came out of nowhere, hit me hard. And of course, with all the coronavirus. And I don't understand because I got a case of beer down in the basement, how I could catch it. Don't know what it is. It didn't, you know, you check in. Okay, feverish, yes. Phlegm, yes. Coughing, yes. Sore neck. That was the odd thing. I didn't see any symptoms that said, you know, any of the colds or flu you to get a sore neck. And the fact that it hit all of us in the house says that, and my poor oldest daughter who got here once and caught it and, you know, well, that's what you get for walking into a petri dish. But it was rough. I mean, I just slept all day Saturday and most of Sunday and just was out. And part of what we wanted to do this week, we were hopefully do our beloved previews episode, but being that Discount Comic Book Service is shipping stuff late, I don't have my previews. And I was going to actually go out and try to look for one. But when I got in the car, I was like, you know what? I probably should not be driving right now. So even now, my energy levels are low, low, low. Not a lot else to freak on. Oh, I'm still waiting for Dynamic Forces to call me. I've got three orders worth about $200 that those ass clowns haven't decided whether they're going to ship me or not. And, you know, why? Why even take my, you know, their big catchphrase, we don't charge you until it ships. Tough shit. I want to know if you're going to ship it. Because if not, I got $200. Well, up until now, I'd probably spend in your store, but now, fuck you, I'm going elsewhere. Don't fuck with me when I'm sick, folks. That's pretty much it. What are you freaking on, Strode?
We are already starting to see the increased cost for high-end hardcovers due to the tariffs. The hardcover that reprints the three, the Bride of the Demon, Son of the Demon, etc., $75 for a hardcover that's not even 500 pages from DC. It looks like the next DC, not this previews, but the next previews, we're going to see much higher prices on things because there are tariffs being levied against stuff that's printed overseas. So if you thought DC's hardcovers were way overpriced already, guess what, kids? You ain't seen nothing yet. It looks like that the price point for their $40 and $50 hardcovers is going to be jumping to $75, which I think could effectively kill their hardcover trade. There's also been a ton of stuff going on at Heavy Metal, and they have not been very forthright about it. I'm not saying they have to be. But I started picking up Heavy Metal when they announced that Grant Morrison was going to be the editor-in-chief. Very quietly, about, I would say, 6-7 months ago, they had gotten so far behind that they canceled all orders from issue 295 up. And then they resolicited them, and they never really put much information in the solicitation anyway. But when they showed up, Grant Morrison was no longer listed as editor-in-chief. He was editorial consultant, and his editorial had been removed. The editor was someone that I hadn't seen. And then I also noticed that the publisher used to be Kevin Eastman, who had bought the magazine back with his Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles money because he didn't want to see it go away. Well, he's no longer the publisher. And you would think, oh, you know, they contacted him. No, through some weird corporate maneuvers, he was very quietly removed. And he found out about it by reading an interview on the internet from the new publisher of Heavy Metal. and he wondered why they hadn't been getting back to him. He thought that it was just, you know, typical delays. The creative end was running late. They'd canceled a bunch of issues because they were so late on things, they didn't want to get charged, because if you're late on things, Diamond will charge you a lot of money in late fees unless you cancel and resolicit. And they are announcing now that they've got a new art director. Heavy Metals, something weird's going on with them. Nobody really knows what. I know about a year ago, they started publishing comics, mostly aimed at music fans. They did a Iron Maiden comic and some reprints of some of their other stuff from the 90s that lent themselves to being in serialized comics. Those seem to have gone away as well. So who knows what's going on over there. And the last thing I am freaking on, I talked about how the the Emerald City Comic Con was canceled. Some smaller conventions have been canceled. There is talk that WrestleMania may have to be canceled. Major League Baseball is talking about how they may not be starting their season, which will be weird. Although there is also what's going on in Europe, because the TV rights fees for soccer are so big, they're running the games in empty stadiums. They're not bringing it, they're not letting fans come, but they get enough money for the TV that they are still showing the games. Now, having seen football in some very empty stadiums, and I mean American football. Yeah, I watched the American Alliance of Football, and I watched the XFL, and some of those stadiums are not very full. They tend to really pump up the sound from the few fans that are there. I can't imagine what it would be like watching a sporting event with no fans. It's like when they show basketball games on cable access from the local high school. You tune in, and it's, oh, there's like 40 people watching the game.
What, you forgot when the NWO took over a stadium?
Yeah, I forgot.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I'll mute myself now.
But it's going to be interesting to see what happens with sporting events and conventions and stuff, because for all of the talk that, oh, this is not real, it's fake. No, it's a very powerful type of flu, is the best way to think of it. And we learned a lot from the Spanish flu epidemic in 1918 and other ones, where for all of the talk of how it'll burn itself out, people forget that the Spanish flu kind of faded away in the summer, but then in the fall of 1918 came back even stronger.
And the scary part is, if all the, I just saw a graph the other day. Okay, look at your computer screen. Okay, put a little graph. You're going to draw yourself, what do you call it, a parabolic curve. You just kind of go up halfway through the middle of the screen, then back down. That's your normal flu. Okay, cut your screen in half. Take that same curve, go all the way to the top, and then all the way back down. That's the danger of it. If everybody gets it all at once, you're going to discover just how fragile our healthcare system is. We don't have enough tests to test everybody. We don't have enough beds in hospitals to take care of people who are going to need it. And I'm talking,
we don't have
just
enough respirators.
I'm just talking from the coronavirus 19. One of our buds from the past, Paul Ewart, he was in the hospital on a respirator with just the regular influenza. And to bump a little, oh, Paul, you just had the regular influenza, not the new fancy one. But that's still going on. Yeah, it is something to be cautious about. My wife's got the same symptoms I had last Friday. My daughter has it now. If I cough hard enough, I'm pretty sure Corey will catch it through the interwebs. But you got to be ready. I mean, you don't have to wipe out Costco with toilet paper. Too late. Well, use your death mate issues. Nothing like a coffin bone hole. But, you know, just common sense, common medicine. Be ready, be prepared. You know, Corey and I live in Snowstorm Alley, where you know, we see if there's a snowstorm coming, we can prepare, get enough food, make sure we're ready. Corey has an advantage where he can cook his foods if he needs to. I don't. I look, well, I'm out of cereal. Wait, I got a whole box of milk. Oh, I guess that's not going to work. Never mind. Yeah, just a little common sense. And like I did, I much as I hated to, I called off sick. I'm sure I'm going to get back to work and go, geez, I mean, last time I called off sick, I remember, and this was years ago, I remember getting called into the boss's office. I mean, like a manager, and being asked why I had taken a sick day. And I almost coughed a phlegm ball up on her desk and said, isn't it obvious why? That's another problem. No one's got sick time, or if they use it, they're not trustworthy. I can't envision the United States shutting down the way Italy is, the way China did. But I did watch the movie Contagion. And if you don't think the government can't do it, you really haven't been paying attention now, have you? Like Corey said, they can do it if they need to.
There's one other thing that isn't being talked about a lot. And I had to think about this. This is the reason I'm able to record early today. About 10 years ago, I had an issue where I always joke where Gandalf stood between my lower intestine, my small intestine, and my large intestine. None shall pass. And they had no idea why. Since then, I've had mild bouts of it. And I can tell when it's coming because I remember very clearly how I felt the day or two before that hospital stay. I was in the ICU for 3 days. I was in the hospital for a week. They never figured out what it was. They still haven't figured out what they're thinking is that the kind of the opening between those two, every so often it just gets stuck. Well, I've been having mild attacks of that on and off for the past week or so. And then this morning, I actually drove into work, and I could tell that I was having a major attack of it. I was only able to last at work for about an hour. I came home. I did all the things that I was told to do last time. Drink a lot of fluid. Basically, down as much Gatorade as you can because your electrolytes are going to be out of balance. Either sleep or walk, because walking stimulates moving blood around it in your digestive system. So I'm feeling better, which is why we're recording. But I kept thinking, you know, if I go to the hospital, how many of those beds are going to be taken up from people who are sick with the flu or COVID-19? There won't be enough beds for normal sickness, let alone all of this on top of that. So take care of yourself. Be aware of basically it's just be prepared and be aware of what's going on.
And remember, like I said, I think I said 80% of the people I get it are going to recover. So the ones you got to watch out for are it seems to be the elderly. And people that
and the very are, young, under well, actually, age 5.
Yeah, the weird thing is young people seem to get it and recover faster.
But under age 5, we've had people dying of that.
Yeah, but if you have an underlying health concern like I do, those are things to be aware of. And believe me, over the weekend I was. But I did what I was supposed to do. I hydrated, I rest, and I watched a lot of Netflix.
Yeah, Netflix stock's going to go through the roof as all the other stock collapses. Yeah. Joe, what are you geeking on?
Not much. What are you geeking on, Corey?
Because of the Emerald City Comic Con, a lot of the people who count on that for making big money had a virtual convention. Oni had stuff that there was going that was going to be exclusive or premiering at Emerald City. They put it up on their website. They had a sale. There were artists who, okay, I can't go to conventions, so I'm going to have a list. Sign up for sketches. Sign up for commissions. Other publishers and I imagine even comic shops were doing the same thing in the area. So look for the artists and publishers and comic shops that normally set up at conventions, throw them a few bucks because they're going to be having sales. They need to make up that income. For all the talk about how, oh, comic conventions are fun, it's a blast, it's this and that, for a lot of artists and publishers and shops, it's income, and it's income that they count on. And if that convention's not running, they're going to need to make up that income. And that could be your gain because, oh, my gosh, Oni was putting out stuff that won't be in comic shops for another 2-3 months that was premiering at this convention. You could pick up the new Akewood book. You could get an Akewood print that was going to be exclusive. They had an Akewood tote bag that was going to be exclusive. There were artists who, well, I'm not doing sketches at Emerald City, so the first 20 people who email me, here are my sketch prices. Just help them out, but also you could get stuff without going to conventions. You could get stuff from your own home. And, you know, there's no way I would have made it to Emerald City, not just because I've retired from conventions, but because, wow, that's the other side of the country. I could get that stuff now.
And leave it to Corey to benefit personally from a worldwide tragedy.
Good. Damn right.
There's a reason. There's a reason he's a rat bastard. I don't care how many goody two shoes he has in his closet.
But, hey, their loss is my gain.
You're just taking advantage of a situation.
Their loss is my gain.
It is.
Let's see. There have been a ton of really cool comics coming out, so I want to highlight a couple of them. The first is there's a comic that I've been buying forever, it seems like. It's issue 50 of World War III Illustrated is a huge, huge book. It's almost 200 pages. And the theme is... Shameless Feminists, and it's all female creators. Trina Robbins was involved in creating it. The editors asked artists for their angry, hopeful, untold, and unbelievable stories. We received beauty, guts, truth, and defiance. A slight majority of our contributors are veterans of World War III Illustrated, but almost half are new to our pages, and some are having their print debuts. We are proud to include art students, grandmothers, and non-binary artists. Yes, even some guys. We are teachers, nurses, protesters, and activists. We are mostly from around New York City, but our national reach extends to Baltimore, Chicago, Easton, Pennsylvania, Gainesville, Florida, Madison, Wisconsin, Portland, Oregon, and San Francisco, going global with artists from Indonesia, Italy, Holland, Mexico, and Spain. World War III has sought out feminist art ever since one of us was invited to create her first comics for issue 3. Happily, the woman cartoonist is not the rare beast she was in the 80s. We now recognize gender is more fluid, more nuanced than we did when we first published a women's issue. Now bigger and madder than previous female-dominated history issues such as Her Stories from 1992, Female Complaints in 1999, and Bitchcraft of 2000, we now offer you Shameless Feminists. World War III is, I think it could be called an underground comic. It's 50 issues. It's basically protest comics. They have a theme every issue. They've made it 50 issues. This is huge. It's, almost 200 pages for $15. It's always been political. So for the people who say comics aren't political, yeah, this one's been political forever, as were all the undergrounds. Just a fantastic book. I read it over the weekend and really enjoyed it. Also over the weekend, as Joe mentioned, it got over 60 degrees in Minnesota in the first week of March. Now,
not that I got to go outside at all, just saying, just bitching.
Now, one of the things that I look forward to every spring is being able to sit out on the deck. I bring out a Bluetooth speaker. I fire up my Spotify, where I have tons of playlists, some created by me, some created by other people. There are comic creators who are creating comic playlists, by the way. The Zorro Django comic had a soundtrack. that was created by the creators. Christina Hendricks loves making playlists and puts out a new playlist every couple of weeks. There are comic creators. I think Colleen Duran put out a playlist. What Spotify is, it's basically you can say, I like this song and this song and this song, and you can create kind of a mixtape of, oh, I like all of these songs. I do that. I take all of the great, what do they call it? The best song in the world from Underground Garage. They do a new song every week, usually a new song. This is the greatest song in the world or the best song in the world. I create playlists of those songs so that when people say, oh, there's no new music worth listening to, well, here you go. Here's a list. I'm really looking forward to that. I like reading comics on the couch. I like reading comics when I'm at work and everything's quiet. I like reading comics at my lunch. But, man, there is nothing like sitting out on the deck when the weather's nice with good music playing and a frosty beverage reading some comics. You've listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half.
Which is probably at least an hour longer than I was able to.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, Joe.
You know, whenever I try to eat healthy, a chocolate bar looks at me and snickers. Even on my deathbed, I still got it. Ralph Melf, I love you. Corey, I just play your music. I'm out of here.
Done, bitches!